And they said, well, we could probably go to court and try to get those houses or something. But then we got the expense of tearing it down. They ain't got any money for that. And after they get it tore down, what do they do with it? It's just going to sit there and it's be off the tax roll. So, and then it also deteriorates from any houses, like the assessment is going down all the time. It's just a mess. So then I talked to Margaret up here, and she suggested that I come and talk to you guys and see what we can, if there's anything we can do about this. I just didn't know what the Board of Health job was. You know, I figured that maybe there's some way we could, they could help these small towns in our county. But it's really a problem. 3 weeks ago, I think in the Des Moines paper was an article, there's 80 or 90 nuisance houses, they call them in Des Moines. Well, those places have got, they can go out and get block grants and stuff like that where there's nothing we can do. But we have to live beside these, and it's really a mess. It really is. The one particular house that I, that really bothered me was, it's right close to my place. The guy says he bought the place, the house, and two lots for $15,000. So you know he didn't get much to begin with. And every time I go see him up there, he mows his yard about once a month. I go up there and I say, are you going to fix this house up or what are you going to do? I said, it's just deteriorating and it makes our houses all up on this block look awful. Well, I'm going to get it fixed. Well, he ain't going to get it fixed. He never is going to get it fixed. Because last month I checked, he was in jail down in Clark County. So those things, it's just going to sit there every year. And I know it's hard to legislate telling people how to live. But, you know, when they just keep going and keep going like that, I don't know. If you guys got the answer,
I don't know if we've got an answer, but the county does have an ordinance that lists public health nuisances, and it defines what the nuisances are. And two of them that kind of pertains to housing, one of them I think is more aimed at a house that's occupied, because it says any building or structure in which people are housed or congregate for any purpose, which building has become dangerous for further occupancy because of structural, sanitary, or other defects. So I think that's more for an occupied structure. But then it goes on to say in the next definition, any building or place that is conducive to the breeding, harboring, feeding, shelter of any vermin or pest, such as but not limited to flies, mice, cockroaches, or rats. So if you've got
termites, can we put there?
It says not limited to, so I think he could be pretty creative. And
so termites.
Yeah. So I. But the problem that the Board of Health is going to have is the only thing we can do is take enforcement action against the owner of that house. And I don't know that once he's cited for a violation, I don't know that the Board of Health has any authority to, you know, to make him either demolish the house or clean it up. So it would be, I think, Margaret, it would be similar to somebody that has a lead violation, you know, elevated lead level in their house. Right. Right. And I think there's state funds available for dilapidated, and I don't know if it's more centered towards structures on Main Street, but you know, dilapidated structure, I think there are some state grant funds available. And you know, I don't know what that would take. If it would take the owner agreeing to sign the title of the house over to the city, and if the city's got the grant money, then they can demolish the house. And you know, the problem the city has is if they go in there and condemn the property and have somebody tear the house down, the only way the city's going to get paid is to put it on the guy's tax rolls. And, you know, all he has to do is stop paying the taxes on it. And the city...
We have several of those.
Yeah. And the city's stuck holding the bag.
Then it goes to sheriff's sale at some point.
Right. It goes to a tax sale, and at some point somebody will buy it for the taxes that are owed on it. But if you've got... some specific house numbers that you can give to Margaret, and we can at least see if they're, you know, if they're going to fit under our nuisance. Sure. Well, if the city doesn't have any mechanism to deal with them,
I'm on the council. The city doesn't have any. We have money, like you just said. Main Street is also going after some demolition grant money.
Yeah. Can you come over here and pull a chair over to the microphone so we can.
Greg Schluter, Councilman, City of Collins. The avenues that we have for Main Street are going to be a lot easier than you guys are talking about now. The council in the past has not been in favor of going after condemned property or trying to condemn a house, take it over, and that's what we're going to have to do now to solve some of this stuff. There's probably a half a dozen pieces of property, like Clifford says, that need to be condemned and bulldozed. Most of the other properties, like you said, we've got some real estate that's been foreclosed, and hopefully those will. And there's some decent property that's in foreclosure, but takes forever to get. We really have no mechanism to go after them other than buying that piece of property, and that's going to take forever. That's not going to happen like right away. So we would really appreciate it if you guys could, you know, take the ball in the front and create some pressure, and maybe, and if we see where we can fit into this without spending a bunch of money, then great.
If it's a health hazard, though, then it does become our.
Let me have a conversation with the county attorney, assistant county attorney, to take care of our civil matters, and maybe get some ideas from her. I think maybe it could be something where the Board of Health and the city could work together and try to come up with a solution, because, like I said, just the Board of Health alone, all we have is enforcement action. We can give them a notice of violation, and then we can assess a fine if they don't comply. And then after that, it's up to the county attorney's office if they're going to actually pursue it. So,
another thing, you know, it just ain't necessary, Colin. There's a lot of little towns that's got the same problem that we do. So, yeah. I mean, it is.
Right.
It really is.
Yeah. And I think part of it has to be an economic development issue, because, you know, if you can get rid of these houses that are actually, you know, falling down on themselves, and, you know, you make your whole package more attractive to somebody that's maybe looking to locate there, because there is some people that are, you know, attracted to the smaller towns. That you can buy a house cheaper there, you know, if you don't mind the drive, if you're going to, you know, drive 20 or 30 miles to work. I mean, I think that's what's important, to try to draw people into these small towns. And if you can do that, you're going to help everybody. You're going to help the school district and you know, everybody involved. So we'll.
I have a couple, three properties in Collins, and none of these are mine that's going to hell, I'll tell you that. But anyhow, I talked to the Habitat for Humanity, and I had a vacant lot, and I've moved three or four houses in Collins, and, you know, they wanted me to do all that. When I talked to them, they wanted me to move the house there, and they wanted me to do all this and do that. And they weren't much in doing anything but getting the glorious get it to somebody that needed it. What the bottom line is.
They want the vacant lot. You probably know that. They want the vacant lot after it's all ready to go.
Yep.
If you have a vacant lot that's a nice piece of property like Clifford has, they want him to donate them. Right. I got one other question. We have had in the last year a couple people living in houses with no running water. And I didn't we call somebody here and ask them about that? I talked to you. Okay. And is that, I mean, if there's no little kids in the house, then there's not much we can do. If there's children there, we can do something. Okay. So if we got children in the house, then there's something we can do. Otherwise,
and if it's a rental, yeah, the more because you don't have a landlord that isn't providing physical housing.
Okay.
Privately owned, privately.
Okay.
But that's no children. That's very, very difficult to do.
One of them, one of each deal here. One was frozen, and then of course it's unthawed now, and they never hooked it up. The water line froze, and the other one was unhooked, and then they just kept staying there and bringing the water in. But they didn't have any kids. So that was a rental house. That's kind of a
rental. They didn't go after the landlord.
Actually, that one is the guy who sold it on contract to this guy, and he ended up in jail. You know, anyway, I think we got her. I think I know where we're at now. You got anything else, sir?
We just appreciate any help you can give.
We sure would.
See what we can come up with. All right, guys. Thanks a lot. Have a good afternoon. Next is the consent agenda. All items listed under the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion on these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. So.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. To approve the consent agenda, is there anything further? I think we do a roll call on this one. Dvorak.
Aye.
That's okay. Passion.
What?
Beck.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Consent agenda is approved. Wow. Okay, so that takes us down to where? Agency and departmental reports?
Yes.
Okay. I was a little confused on the agenda, but I got it now. If there was a lot of Roman numerals on it. environmental health. And this is new today because you weren't at the Board of Health meeting, or Board of Supervisors meeting. So it is. I'm going to have to pay attention. Yeah.
I'm just going to run through some numbers here. Septic numbers for 2014, they've gone up quite a bit. 34 for new septic permits, and that compares to 15 new house permits from planning and development. So a lot of them going in are either for shops or retrofit ones. So I don't think the housing market is as robust as we thought it would be, but the septic systems keep, you know, the numbers keep up just for that reason. Inspections, 22, and then repair permits, 4 of them. And lots of them are because of the time of transfer inspections. For wells, we have 10 geothermals and 2 water so far this year, 13 plugging, 2 well rehab, 42 water tests, and time of transfer well inspections, 17. We still have about 7,000 that remaining in the grant fund that's going to have to go back to the state. We're just not getting as many wells to plug. We really, you know, we beat the bushes out there looking for them, but there are fewer and fewer. It does worry me a little bit that money is going to go away for those communities that still need that, you know. Or maybe they'll switch that money over to septic systems or some other useful water quality issue. So for enforcement, let's see, I have 10 outstanding notice of violations, 5 are in negotiations. That means they've applied for a permit and I've gone out to their site. It looks like they're going to go forward with those. Let's see, 5 binding agreements, 0 overdue. Those are from sales. Most of them were waiting for the house to be demolished and they're waiting to get their money together and that, so we give them extensions. We had 19 complaints in 2014 so far, and then 7 since April 1st, and that was the last time I presented to the board. So garbage at apartment complex in rural Nevada, odor from trailer park lagoons, Flummer Felt north of Ames, mold, leaky pipes at Rolling Hills, that's by Maxwell north of it, yard maintenance, that was Fernald, sewage from a clean out, Fernald, water quality at Crestview, rural Ames, and that was Greta Anderson that was writing an article on that. Paul is familiar with Greta. She was involved in the CAFO study also. And then an abandoned house, and that was from Cliff that just talked to you guys today. So a lot of them, as you can see, are within communities. And that makes sense because when you're in communities, you can see each other's problems and you call them in. So, and then just today, a little bit ago, I got a call from Story City. Folks are wondering how to get rid of their flood damage garbage. So I'll just get all that information together. Maybe we'll put something on the website so people know how to handle that stuff. And we probably will, with this flood, have to talk to folks about testing, shocking and testing the wells if any of them have overtopped. So for pool numbers, we didn't make our deadline. These pools, the program is a mess, and we are fixing it. But Matt and Kathy are doing a fantastic job, but it is just taking longer. Because just about, I think there's been 2 pools that haven't had violations so far. Some of them are important, some of them are more like record keeping and that, which is can be very important, you know, if you're tracking disease and that. So we have inspected 20 pools, 10 spas, 1 waiting pool, and 2 slides. That was in the Nevada pool there. And then facility closures, ding, 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 Matt. He's the pool guy, and he closed 5, and all for really good reason. Most of the time it was the chlorine levels were so incredibly high. Do you want to talk about that, Matt? I think you'll open some eyes here.
One pool, I took the sample, and our meter will read between 0 and 12 parts per million. The requirement is the pool has to be between 1 and 8 parts per million. Under 1 closure, over 8 closure until the chlorine's right. And our meter does reads up to 12. Took the sample, and it just flashes high if it's above 12. So I diluted the sample in half, still red high. Had to dilute it into quarters, and it ended up almost just shy of 30 parts per million. So I'm like looking to see
with the cutoff of 8.
My hair bleached on my arm from reaching in the pool. And
that was a hotel pool.
And it really, the inspections the last few years were hastily done. There's been so many things that I've found that apparently were not there the last few years, like a pressure relief valve on a pool heater that you could tell they never had one. Why would you just remove one and not, you know, but that was something that was checked, you know. Some of these have not had a certified pool operator for 3 years, you know, their certification expired 3 years ago. You know, like the one with the 30 parts per million, his had it expired for over 5 years, and he's like, well, I didn't know they expired. Well,
and crusty old test kits that you can tell haven't been used every 4 hours, you know.
when there's spider webs in the test tubes, but they're writing down their manual tests, you know, 4 times a day, that things like that. But we decided to help and put binders together for some of these facilities that, because you have to have an operations manual, an emergency operations plan, the daily testing log, because there's some of these places you go in, and they'll open up the file cabinet, and you'll have a manila envelope that's so stuck full that there's always as much as the folder coming up on the sides, and, you know, it's like some of their testing, you have to do a monthly bacteria test, well, they'll get the test in, and it'll be somebody else's file that one will put the newest one in the back, the next month the person puts it in the front, so you're searching through a stack of papers like this trying to find. So we just put together a binder for them that has a template of an emergency or the operations plan, an emergency plan, and then I'm trying to get the state has the daily testing forms available. So I'm trying to get all the facilities to use that plan. There's no requirement for what they have to use. They can write it down on a piece of notebook paper, but which some of them do. But it's my benefit if I go in and every single place uses the same form and I can just look at it, glance, and not have to try to determine, because some of these places, their log sheets have been photocopied so many times that the straight line now goes like this and it's so faded you can't tell which what. And so they can standardize throughout the whole county. It just makes my job so much easier. And then, you know, just getting them to correct everything that's been lax for the last 3 years or whatever, you know. But next year, most of these facilities we're going to be able to go into and be done in a half hour, where now it's taking me an hour and a half just to do one facility. And then the inspection's almost quicker than coming back and doing the report, because you have to cite every code, the section of the code with everything, you know, by the code of Iowa, you have to cite out everything for them. So that's the hardest part, because the pool code is one of the most poorly written codes I've ever seen. So you have to sit there, flip through pages and try to find the right place and write that down. And that's what takes the longest part of these reports. And when you have 17 violations in one facility, it takes a while.
Well, now you know where they're at, though.
Yeah. I didn't like swimming in public pools in the first place, and I definitely don't like it now.
Well, how long had Greenbelt had the contract to do this for us?
2 years.
And who did it prior to that? Okay.
So I did talk to the state IDPH and said, we're not going to make our deadline. Can we have an extension? She said, no problem at all. We're just so thrilled that you took the program over. So no problem at all. We're not going to lose any money on the deal or anything like that. But, yeah, it just, well, we got started later in the year not realizing that it would take so long, especially the outdoor pools can't do them until after Memorial Day. So the next year we'll get it right. So. Okay, and then tattoos. We have 6 active facilities in the county, all in Ames. 13 inspections conducted and 14 citations, but I think they've all been taken care of by now. And I don't think they're, like, hugely awful. Nothing that we needed to shut them down, nothing like tattooing underage children or anything awful like that, you know, more plumbing or certificates. Yeah. Yeah, so nothing atrocious there. Canning, we have 18 facilities have been inspected out of 20. I think as of today, I think that's down to 20 out of 20. One reinspection, one citation so far, and that was the sticker didn't indicate what kind of bulb. You have to have the right bulb so that people don't burn themselves, so that it has to match the instructions on the machine. So that's where we're at. Lead program, 8 open cases. I took an ongoing training for the tracking system that the feds just put out July 1st, and it will reduce staff time quite a bit, especially over at homework. So I think the nurses will be a lot happier with this program when we switch over. Trainings and meetings, let's see, LEPC, I continue to go to the DuPont Community Advisory Panel, very interesting. I also found it interesting that they really didn't talk much about the fires. It was more, you know, positive things and really didn't want to bring up the fires, which I thought was a little telling, actually. All three of us took the IDPH training for pool scanning and tattoos, and all three of us took the bloodborne pathogens. Let's see, yeah, that, blah, blah, blah. What else stands out here? Kathy went down to the National Healthy Homes Conference and learned a lot. And then Kristen attended the Administrative Assistant Conference, and she is working on certification for that. I'll be a dead horse here. This is the Tremlin Finisher CAFO. Box is full because of the photos. Paul and I were out there last night because we caught a call about the road flooding right in front of the proposed CAFO, and it is, yeah. So that's what most of the photos are coming in for. So, and this is my last slide for miscellaneous activities. I continue to work on the Cameron Estate subdivision proposal. We got the soils. The borings in on those, and everything's looking pretty good on those. Those are like around 1 acre lots, so a pretty small lot to work with. We received our first pushback on that new septic disclosure ordinance. A guy was putting up a new work shed, machine shed, and he could not believe that he would have to disclose his septic system for his house. He could not believe it, and what he's planning on doing is just skipping it. He's already plumbed it in, but then he's not going to do it, he said. So, to me, that's a red flag. I need to keep an eye on that one, you know. he said, that's just not fair, and I said, what's not fair is that you're not treating the sewage. That's what's not fair. That's what doesn't make sense to me, because this law didn't make sense to him. Not treating your sewage doesn't make sense to me. We went round and round, got the phone, and he had me, had the contractor called like 2 minutes later. We went round and round with him too. So, but I think it's a good ordinance. I know we're still in the testing, a 1 year testing stage. So that's really the only thing I've heard back. Kristen, have you heard anything?
People may have questioned why we're asking, but once I explain it, they have no problem. I've encountered no problems with them filling it out. It
hasn't been a very common thing that to come up, right? Or at least
right.
Not this year
right.
So far.
So far, I've only seen applications that we already have septic and diagram on file. Or they are applying for septic along with their housing application, you know, their zoning permit application.
We switched over to the Durango this morning, so we went from 150,000 miles to an 87,000 mile. So as each department gets new vehicles, we get their, instead of them trading that vehicle in, we get that vehicle. And Paul, I'm here to say we are next on the list, okay? Because, I mean, it's just getting old. It's just getting old. That darn thing, it, you know, it looks good, but boy, it's sitting in it. It's just... you know, we're up next, please, okay? This is, you know, animal control and emergency services and the auditor and planning and development and sheriff, and rightly so, sheriff. But, you know, it's our turn next.
Wait, I thought I was next.
You have a new bicycle, yeah.
That's right. I wouldn't mind having that ambulance.
That is cool. I don't the toy from that. And then the last point I want to make, Nevada is putting in a new public well. I assume it's to increase their production because of DuPont. And it's going over in, oh, there's already a well over there. It's over by, well, Dr. Kluge's house over that way. And I
on the east side of the interstate.
On that bottom ground there.
Yeah, south of Lincoln Highway.
And I know before when the city put a well in there, their residents insisted on flow meters being installed on all their wells because they were afraid of the, you know, the cold.
Dropping that water table. dropping their water table.
Right, right, right. So I don't know if that's going to come up again, but that might be an issue. And then, speaking of Dr. Kluge, I ran into him at Lowe's, and he and Rosemary Savokas had wedding rings on. They were married, so yeah, they just got back from their cruise over in Europe. So very good news for them. They're very happy. And that's all I have to report. Any questions from anybody?
That's a great last part of your report.
Margaret's always got something interesting in her report. That takes us down to additional items. Well, wait a minute. Go ahead. We'll go to discussion of the CAFO Master Matrix reviews.
Okay. So, you know, I was on the griddle for about a month. I really was. And it was not, and it was uncomfortable for me because I felt like I was two-faced because I had to deal with the applicant and then I had to deal with people opposed to that CAFO going in. And Paul was talking to Boone County and learned that they actually have a committee that reviews these master matrix. And that it works quite nicely. And I was wondering, you know, because I'm employed by you all, I am wondering if that is a possibility that you'd be interested in getting a volunteer committee that would review these, or possibly you all could be the Master Matrix reviewers, although I know you've got full plates. It might be too big of a job to do this for, you know, but, and then our department would certainly be, you know, provide as much scientific background as they need, you know, and then Matt could do the mapping for them, things like this. But it just seems like, and it is a lot of power for one person to decide if it's a, you know, how to score these master matrix. So, you know, I'm just throwing it out there to see what your idea is. I will continue to do these. I do a fair job. I do a good job on them. I think that, I don't think that the committee would come up with any other suggestion or score. It might be a little different, but just take me off the hot seat. It was really unpleasant.
A year of those?
Oh, not many.
Four?
This is our first one this in 2014, right?
I think since I've been on the board, I think we've done six.
But I'm thinking.
Three of those. Two of them were expansion of cattle feeding operations.
We didn't get a lot of heat from them.
No. One of them was the expansion of a hog feeding up by Zering, and then there's been three new hog facilities. Chelmland's, Jensen and Men. So in almost four years, we've done six. Well, went to a different location.
Okay.
So I think ultimately it's, you know, a couple of things. It's I think the Board of Health has to decide if they want Margaret to continue doing what she's doing. And if the Board of Health doesn't, then I think it's the Board of Supervisors who determine who's gonna score the matrix.
Yes, I agree.
So and I did a couple of weeks ago. I had a meeting with a Boone County supervisor, and he made mention that they have a committee of I think four people. He said that score theirs, and I didn't have time to ask him any of the details, but it's. It's been an interesting process, I can tell you that.
The problem, too, is that they come any time. So this time just happened to be the peak of septic season, too. So it was just really something.
Once somebody comes in with their application, the county's got 30 days to score this master matrix. We can ask for apparently we found out now that we can ask for an additional 30
days. Thanks
for
telling us, DNR. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, explain to me, the master matrix is basically how water is going to flow?
Sorry, no, it's a scoring technique that DNR devised, okay? So, each year, every county, each and every year, every county has to resolved to take on this construction
evaluation
resolution. Okay. So Story County does. So every January we do this. And then, so if you need a construction permit, you also have to pass a certain score, 440 points, in order to be able to go forward with the application process. And what those things do is it requires above and beyond setbacks or plans or special way to manage manure, things like that, that make it a better CAFO. And then those items go on your permit. Okay? So it just raises the bar a little bit for these CAFOs is what it does. And my job is to score them. And that is where a lot of the controversy came.
The producer scores it,
mm-hmm.
and then the county scores it. They have to get 440 points in order to pass. This particular time, Mr. Chelman, the score that he and his contractor gave themselves was 515 or 500. It was high.
High.
And by the time it was all over and done with, he passed by 5 points. So it's kind of like a driver's test. You either pass or you don't. And what we've done in the past, and we did this time, is that if we see that he's deficient in some areas, Margaret will work with the applicant to make the changes that he needs. Mm-hmm. And that's where we got burned last time, is because now it's like, oh, you know, now we're giving them the answers. Now we're like a school teacher giving the kid the test answers. Well, what I don't necessarily think they understand is once they meet this threshold, whatever he puts in that matrix or whatever he chooses to score himself on becomes part of his manure management plan, and he has to abide by that as long as that operation is in business. And Mr. Chelman also said that any time that Margaret or anybody from her department wants to come out and look things over during the construction phase or look things over while it's actually in use, that we can do that, and he's the first producer that's actually done that. And I have concerns because the DNR, I mean, the day we were out there at the site, the guy that, Jeff Theobald, made the comment that this is probably the last time we'll ever be here. So they give the producer, you know, here's your specs for your concrete pit, you know, and hopefully your contractor follows these specs. But there's no
inspection variant.
No, there's no oversight by the DNR. There's no inspections by the DNR, and that's troubling. But I think it depends on how you look at things. If we would have not helped Mr. Chelman make the changes he made on his application, his master matrix would have failed. He'd have been below the 440 points.
It's all just paper stuff. It's
right.
Like, well, your action plan doesn't include this phone number or that phone number, you know, just kind of. But as far as concrete things, he had it, you know, like distance to houses, distance to creeks, distance to businesses. Those things were all met. It was the plans that were missing a few things. And
right.
So, and
I think they, you know, had he not got the 440 points, he'd have had to start the process over again. So in 30 days or 60 days, we'd have been right back where we were at that point. And even if the county would have failed his matrix, then it goes back to the DNR, and they score it. And the DNR only scores those things that they have jurisdiction over. And, yeah, I mean, so for somebody to think that, well, because the county failed him, this facility is not going to happen is not true. The DNR will go back and rescore that if the county recommends that they don't approve the permit. If they recommend that they do approve the permit, I don't think the DNR even looks at the master matrix. I've got an email that Wayne Clinton got several years ago from their legal counsel.
I think that they do, Paul. I think Cindy Garza mentioned that she pulled one back. Yeah.
Why doesn't DNR inspect these as they're putting these up, make sure they're getting the right rebar and getting the right concrete and all this?
They don't have the funding. They don't have the manpower to be able to do it.
someone needs to hold them accountable. I mean, it's no different than the state plumbing code, state electrical, because they all get inspections and have inspectors that have to go out. So,
well, your congressman, we've talked for a long time about this, and you know, you hear a lot about local control, and you know, to some, local control means if the county had the authority, they wouldn't approve any of them. Or if the county had the authority to say, yeah, we'll approve them, but they've all got to go, you know, east of Highway 65. We don't want them anywhere near any populated areas. I would sooner see the county have the ability to go in and make sure that the structure's put in correct. If the state's not going to do it, then, but the problem the county has is we don't have anybody on staff that, you know, that's no. Right. So.
Well, the state then. Yeah.
So it's a difficult situation. That, you know, and everybody likes to blame the DNR, but the DNR is only operating the way the legislature tells them that they can operate, and under the guidelines that they get. They don't have the funding available to have enough manpower for people to go out and actually inspect these. I mean, they'll never even come back out. After a building's been in, up and running for 5 years, they won't send somebody out to see, you know, let's see what kind of shape you're in. So.
I think that would be better if they have hired a few. Maybe it will help that there is a little more behind.
Yeah.
That it takes them 7 years to make a rival thing, but now they
have right.
People,
so. A little bit better. So I will have a conversation with.
Hi. It just seems like, oh, something we need to consider, because it seems like a good idea to me.
And that's true, because we've, you know, like your department or the engineer, they've got the ability to help out with the technical side of that. And that's, I think, I mean, there's some counties where the supervisors actually go out and score them themselves. So, but we'll...
Yeah.
And I did.
If you had a committee to look at this, a volunteer committee, who would you have on it?
That's a hard question, because you almost want to split it. You want control and time.
Right.
But then I don't know if that committee could ever come to an agreement. You know, so it's not without flaws. I don't know. Do you know the makeup of Boone?
Well, no, I don't. He told me, I think there was a retired professor from Iowa State, but I don't know what, you know, what college he's retired from, but.
A lot of them really are, you know, from.
And I think part of maybe what we can do is now I know when the individual before Chumlin would have been Lincoln Feeders. We didn't. Did we require them to provide more documentation on there? I think it was the type of feeders they're using, or
feeders, and then also they had to change the way their turnaround was.
Right. Right.
Like during the hearing, we changed that.
Yeah. And I think maybe if going into it, if we have a certain for things like that, if okay, here's what documentation you need to provide us in order for this, you know. Yeah.
Ready. I mean.
Right. We'll just keep our fingers crossed we don't get any more. But I did have a guy tell me there's one going in up by McCallsburg someplace. But I think it's smaller than. Yeah.
I think we need a change. Because it's called a public hearing, but I think we need to change that to an informational meeting. Maybe have it right after the Board of Supervisor meeting and not make a decision on it at that, you know, do it at the next meeting.
Well, typically in the past, we've run out of time. I mean, we don't think, unless we'd have called a special meeting, we'd have been up against our 30-day deadline.
But right. we get in trouble because we consider it a public hearing, so then we have to publish it in the newspaper according to the public hearing code.
Right.
Or if you have a informational meeting, then we're not set to those deadlines for the newspaper. We can publish it and have it, you know, we could publish it 1 week, have it the next week,
right,
and not be tied to those deadlines for the publication.
Well, it's referred to as a public hearing.
But it's not, though, really. I mean, it's not like an ordinance change where,
right,
you know, it's just a, like what we had at Collins, just a informational meeting for people to come in, give their opinions to you guys, and that. It's not... Not
well,
a code change.
We're not required
like
to have
that.
One at all.
Yeah.
Right, right. I think one problem that we run into is we have to make a resolution to have the hearing and then have the hearing, and that's what puts us at the end of that 30 days. If we could get rid of that resolution step, and I don't think I know we did not used to do that. If we could somehow avoid having to do
that.
Well,
that's because it's called a public hearing.
No, I think even public hearings before didn't need a resolution.
Well, I think the county does that for some reason. I've never worked for a government that ever had to have a resolution to have a public hearing. But if we got rid, because of the way the county does it, they have to have the resolution because it's a public hearing. But if you call it an informal meeting or an informational meeting, get rid of that public hearing, then we don't have to have the resolution. We don't have to have the required publication in the newspaper. So our time gets better. We're not, you know, because you have to have, the week before, the Thursday before, right, the deadline for the publication in the paper. So you're a week and a half right there waiting for that. Well, then, yeah, and if it comes in on, say, a Wednesday, well, then we have to wait till Tuesday to have the resolution for the public hearing. That everything, when you only have 30 days and you're a week and a half to 2 weeks for a publication in the newspaper because it has to run for so long and you have to have it twice, in the paper twice, right? One? Is it one? I don't think
twice. And, well, now we know that we can ask for another 30 days.
Margaret, have you heard any more on that trailer court clear out in West Ames? That one on the right, by the, is that what that one is? The one out by the drive?
I think they're still in business. We're still getting complaints on them. So.
Okay, yeah.
We think you were talking about College Mobile Home Park.
Yeah.
On Lincoln Swing.
Because that one is closing down because a lot of the folks from the Lincoln Swing are moving to Crestview further west.
Lincoln Swing. Where is Lincoln? Which one is it?
It ends up, it comes out on South Dakota, right by the old come and go. It goes behind Lincoln Way, and it's all apartments. Starts
Dakota,
by
or east
car
of South
wash.
Dakota.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there's a small mobile home park that was on the south side of that street.
That's going away?
Yeah. I think that's what's causing the confusion.
Yeah, maybe that's the one.
But I had somebody tell me that they sold it to build apartments.
That makes sense.
And that makes sense, more sense than it does.
Yeah,
more.
Now that I know who's doing it, yeah, it would make sense.
Okay, any staff comments?
One question, like especially this time of year and with the pool inspections and everything, you know, not every day you're able to take a lunch, and well, you think, well, just, you know, I've got a couple hours, so Friday I'll try to get out of here a little early. Well, then something else comes up. You get a contractor on a Friday the morning and says, well, I'm putting the system in today. Can you come out this afternoon? Well, then that's all you got. So it's happened a few times. Upstairs has said something to us about, you know, no overtime, and we don't. I personally, because we get a choice every year whether to take comp time or overtime. Well, basically. when they're saying something about it, they don't want to do it. So. But you know, it's not something that happens every week, but here and there, and about every time it does happen, or once every 3 months we hear something about it. So, since we're technically not county employees, we're your employees, but they're saying something to us. Do you guys have an issue against a few few hours of comp time. I mean, it's not overtime, it's comp time. We get an hour and a half of basically vacation time instead of overtime.
You get comp time now, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I get comp time.
Right.
I don't get paid for the hours.
Right.
I don't get anything extra in a paycheck. It's just put towards time off.
Right. And how many hours of comp time can you accumulate?
80.
Okay.
How many?
80. 80 hours.
So what are you asking?
I'll just, because I don't like hearing from up. Yeah, just a blessing. Because when somebody that really doesn't have the authority to say anything is saying it's because we're not technically county employees. We're your employees.
Right.
They just write the paychecks. But, you know, if it's not like I'm getting 10 hours a week extra. It's just, you know, if you don't end up getting...
But you're getting it in comp time.
Yeah. Yeah, it's comp time. It's not overtime, so it's not money out of the budget, but it eventually does come out.
It's calculated like overtime. So if you work an hour over, you get an hour and a half of comp time.
Yep.
And you'd rather have the money.
No. I would just rather be able that it's okay for me to...
Right.
They don't want it happening, is what. They want 40 hours a week, nothing more.
Well, if you work overtime and you can't take it off, you know, if you work an hour over one day and you can't take it off in that pay period,
mm-hmm.
then you write it down as comp time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's plain and simple. I mean, they can't tell you that you can't write it down because that violates the fair labor standards.
They just don't want, you know, it's not my intent, you know, on Wednesday when I don't get a lunch. Oh, well, great, I'm gonna have 41 hours this week, you know.
Right.
Well, that's not my intention, and it's like, well, hopefully I can get out of here an hour early on Friday, but, you know, we're supposed to have an 8-hour notification for like, contractors putting stuff in, but a lot of them will call that morning and say, can you come out this afternoon? Well, if it's a Thursday, we'll say, well, no, we could do it Friday morning, but, you know, on Friday you don't want something open over the weekend when it's going to rain, and so
right.
It's just, I don't like... a department saying no extra hours when it's really not even their place to say.
If you work the time and you can't take it off in that same pay period, then write it down as comp time. And if they want to call me about it and ask me about it, tell them to call me.
Okay.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean,
sounds like you have your blessing.
Any board comments?
And then? Second.
Motion of second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.